Well, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls with Mr. John Hogue as we talk about prophecy on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, back with John Hogue. We'll get your calls in a second. John, let's take a look a little bit more at some of your prophecies, and then we'll get to the calls. So we were talking about Putin. He seems to have Teflon on him. He's able to let things just pop right off him.
Well, he is a Libra sun, 13 degrees Libra. So balance and being that kind of Daruma doll, this Bodhidharma doll in Japan, where it's this toy where no matter how many ways you throw the doll, it always ends up sitting up because of the gravity is heavy in its posterior. So maybe he has an iron bottom. I don't know. But I don't think he's going to be deposed. And he seems to be dealing with his the square of his sun with Pluto in a very, very good way. But that doesn't mean it isn't going to be difficult. I do see, though, that the oil prices will rise latter half of this year, more towards $80 a barrel, that it's not going to be so cheap as it is now. And that, of course, will increase Russia's abilities to weather this economic storm. There's another thing that's a mistake that we make in the West. We think that, especially in America, that everybody has the same pain factors and likes and dislikes as Americans. So when we put economic sanctions on Russia, we think, oh, they're going to act like us. It's going to make them want to do what we want.
Not going to happen.
No, Russia feels Russian nature is more suspicious of economic booms because they don't often happen. It's a tough country. So, and if anything, when Russia is economically in trouble, they tend to make more rash strategic decisions, like Crimea. And so it actually has the adverse effect to do this. And it's a shame, really, because America's greatest prophet, Edgar Cayce, had said, and I've talked about this before in your show, that America's role in the future is to live its dream and its constitution by example, not by pontificating the constitution and acting as a hypocrite. This is Casey's words, not mine. And this is needed to become brothers with Russia, to help Russia become in its destiny what he said would be the hope of the world. Now, even I as an American find that Russia, Putin, or Russia in the future being a hope of the world, how is that possible? If I step back from my own nationalistic program biases and look at the history of Russia and then see how it reflects the future of Russia, it is uniquely positioned to be the only country that straddles both the East and the West. So it does, whether it likes it or not, have a destiny to be a great bridge between the East and the West. It straddles Asia and Europe. And you can see in the strategic thinking of Vladimir Putin that he understands that. Now, certainly, I don't agree with his politics, and I wouldn't want to live under Vladimir Putin. But when I look at world leaders, I have to look beyond my American biases and just regard them. There's been a lot of great world leaders in history who are not members of a democracy, but were very important and positive figures in the world beyond the issues that maybe they didn't give enough freedom. For instance, we all love the man who built the Taj Mahal. We all love the great Mughal emperors that gave India so much beauty and culture, but they were all autocrats. They weren't Democrats. And so in the same way, you have in Putin what I think history will see is a noble autocrat, an Emperor Akbar. And that, I think, is going to be the testimony of him in the future, that he's going to be considered a modern Peter the Great. Peter the Great was an autocrat, but Peter the Great brought Russia into the modern times. And sometimes, as he famously said, I will do so, dragging Russia kicking and screaming into modern times. Also, when you are in power in Russia, you have to deal with the oligarchic mafia setup. I mean, when I lived in India, you have to deal with a reality that we don't really see here in America, and that's the culture of bakshish, where you can't just do everything by the law. You have to also bribe people and
yeah.
if you want
grease the skids and everything
yeah.
else.
And Americans are so poorly educated about what other cultures have and do that they then dictate their own worldview, which is so uninformed. It makes it so dangerous that we do this. I would love to see in the future that every American has to spend 6 months living, not as a tourist, but actually living in another country, preferably a developing country. I think any American who has done that has his or her eyes open to a wider world than those who never step out of their bubble of information or these borders.
All right, let's take the calls now. We go to Gary in London, Ontario, Canada, to get things started. Gary, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much.
Very
nice
welcome.
Talking to you, John. Thanks for taking my call. I've called in before and asked some different guests on the program about a couple of books about the Pleiadians and the Arcturians. Do you know anything about that?
I've studied Billy Meyer's predictions, which are quite copious, related to the Pleiadians.
Billy Meyer is quite the character, John.
Yes.
Great photographs, great movies.
Yes, it's and also some great Madame Blavatsky and gaffes. I mean, the idea that a picture was shown of the future, which actually existed, about the future of New York and some disaster, it reminds me of what Madame Blavatsky, who created Theosophy, did towards the end of her life. She actually faked some phenomenon of these letters coming out of other dimensions, which were actually being siphoned through a crack in the ceiling, floating down on her. And to understand this from a prophetic scholarly context, it doesn't mean that she was a fraud. She was what often happens to people who become very public with their work, even gifted psychics. They get lost in the desire or the need to perform. And it kind of goes against one of the basic occult laws, is not to perform, become a performer, like Gene Dixon struggled with it. I even struggle with it. There's always this danger that you will feel compelled that you've got to make a prediction, and that gets you into ego, and that gets you out of whatever mystery that you step out of the way to make these things happen. That doesn't mean that Jean Dixon was a fraud. She wasn't. She even, towards the end of her life, predicted the fall of the Berlin Wall and that it would be dissected as pieces for souvenirs at a time when that seemed impossible. And same with Blavatsky. She was an authentic seeress. I've quoted her often, but in the end of her life, she did taint her work this way. And Billy Meyer seems to have done the same thing. And he's also authentic. His prophecies are quite interesting. I hope to write a book about them someday.
All right, let's go to Will in Vancouver, British Columbia, where I will be June 6th. Hello, Will. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, George, it's great talking to you.
You
I have
too.
A quick question for Mr. Hoag.
Sure.
And it relates to a book I read on Kindle titled Order of the Holy Spirit by W.C. Pouvoir. In the book, it centers around an elite order of knights called the Order of the Holy Spirit, which was created in the year 1560 or so. And I'm wondering if John knows anything about this order. I'll take my answer off air. Thanks.
All right. John, thanks. You're in the know for a lot of stuff. What about that?
Never heard of it. There are a lot of, as a tributary subject to prophecy, there's secret orders, secret societies, some of them presumed to even be interplanetary, I'm actually on the case of studying a group that I found out about it when I lived in India called the Ashoka Nine, which is an esoteric group of nine adepts that each take an aspect of Lord Buddha. Ashoka was the great Buddhist convert and emperor of India that about 2,000 years ago, most of India at that time was Buddhist until the Buddhists were kind of flushed out by the Brahmins and Hinduism was restored. And it is believed in India that these Ashoka Nine adepts keep replacing themselves and are sustained to this day, and that one of their most famous attempts to manipulate the destiny of mankind, humanity, was to actually be a channel giving Hitler messages that initially launched a wars, and then he was like a forest fire, if you will, to burn out the old for some preparation for some new thing. Now, you got to understand that these groups, that doesn't sound very nice to those of us who like to cuddle close to that old familiar good guys, bad guys idea. These esoteric groups look at our world in a much more transcendental. They look beyond the good and evil. They appear amoral, but they might actually be doing something transmoral, that is, beyond our limited morality of understanding what's good and bad for us. And Hitler was used as a force of destruction to pave the way, some people believe, in the cleansing of the world. And the debate is that either he stopped listening to their channel, or they changed the message so that he would destroy himself once he invaded the Soviet Union. So I'm looking at all of that amazing story and trying to see if there's some truth to it. And I've been studying this now for 20 years. I hope to actually give out my conclusions on this in a chapter on a book that I'm doing on Adolf Hitler and his mystical connections to prophecy.
In your new book, tell me about the fascination with Saturn and the tie-in.
Saturn is, like I was saying earlier, that I literally use the cover, the picture of Saturn that's on the cover of my book became like a crystal ball, literally orb. That's what scrying is. You use an object to look to trigger in your subconscious an opening that allows you to step out of your own way and make predictions. And the whole book then is this very kind of looking in the mirror darkly into the kind of gothic, it's kind of a gothic prophecy book. It's kind of unusual from the ones I usually write. It just made me want to look with my eyes wide open into the future and just look at the karmic consequences of not facing things as they are. But for all our right and noble reasons, we project what we want our future to look like. We need to actually see what our future is becoming by our actions, most of which are unconsciously motivated. And Saturn looks like a grim reaper, but really Saturn's the most compassionate force in astrology. It's the place in your chart, wherever it is, where it shows you where your limits are. And a wise man and a wise woman always embraces this. In fact, in the dedication to the book, let's see if I can find the dedication. It's one of the more odd dedications done, I think, in any book. Here we go. I dedicated it to Dirty Harry, this book. I said to
good Clint, old Clint.
To Clint Eastwood's character, Dirty Harry. While he's pointing a .44 Magnum in one's face, only someone wise in the ways of Saturn's influence over our lives would famously declare, a man must know his limitations.
So what are you thinking, punk?
Yeah. I know, I mixed the metaphor. That's what he was acting. That is the correct line, but the other line comes at the end of the movie when he's looking down at the fellow who blew himself up.
All right, we'll get into more of John's prophecies, but let's go back to the calls. We'll go to Steve, truck driving in the state of Maine. Steven, you're up with us, sir.
Morning, George. Morning, John.
Good morning.
First-time caller.
Thank you.
Morning. Well, thank you. You know, I'm partial believer and partial skeptic to the whole prophecy thing. So my question to you would be, that is a prophet someone that lays the path or the seed to the future, or is it a prophet, somebody that can actually predict the future and not have a radical group act on that prediction?
Yes and yes. That's actually the answer, is that, you see, when a prophet is seeing the future and foretelling the future, and if it's being, like even right now, I'm talking to millions of people. When one is looking at the future, now a lot of people are thinking about alternatives to that future, whether they want to be a part of that future. In my experience of prophecy, looking at whatever said by verifying the documented predictions that show they indeed were made and they indeed did predict these things, that my experience in my skeptical inquiry, and I mean that in the true sense of the Greek word, looking at this without bias for or against, skepticos, I have found over 30 years that there is indeed a gift of prophecy. There is indeed potential. The future is full of potentials that we access, and we can also, in the present, change the direction we're going in. So it makes it very frustrating for people who try to cram me up this idea, dogmatic idea, that that is actually wrong in the Bible, in Deuteronomy, that a prophet is able to see everything perfectly because everything's preordained. That's political. That's what I call propaganda rather than propaganda. It's a propagation of one group of prophetic traditions that were the only surviving group that had given us the rules of how prophecy works, because all their competitors, the Babylonians, the Hittites, and others, seers, did not survive archaeological evidence. So that would be like me saying my categories for how prophecy works are true because I say them. And you have no one else to verify and judge skeptically whether I'm right or wrong. So what Moses said in Deuteronomy is like that. It's just one man's opinion that is not verified by other traditions.
Let us grab Jan in Brooklyn before the break. Jan, go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, great. Hi. You mentioned that the 1%, they're not trying to hurt us. What about the vaccinations? Bernard Gates said that vaccinations are for population control and GMOs. I feel horrible with GMO stuff. And I'm wondering, does Nostradamus say anything about the food being rotten or famine in the future?
All right, about 30 seconds, Mr. Ho, to the break.
There are many prophecies about the decline and fall of modern times where food gets bad, but it's not so. There's nothing that directly states that there's a conspiracy to make the food bad. It's more that it's the neglect of consciousness in our actions that makes everything corrupt.
John, we'll be back with you in just a moment. His website, of course, hoagprophecy.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We've got a couple amazing programs for you on our next Coast to Coast program. You can get up to our coasttocoastam.com website and just read all about it. We're going to come back with some final questions with John Hoag next. John, any tragedies coming from space, asteroids or anything? Do you see that?
No, I don't see any.
Good, good.
That's farther down the 2030s.
Well, but you do think it's going to happen eventually.
Well, I think we're going to get, yes. In fact, it's in Nostradamus' prophecy that he describes in detail where it will crash. Doesn't give a date, though.
No.
But definitely hasn't happened in the past, because when it hits, it's a mountain the size of about a quarter mile in circumference out of the sky, and it crashes off the coast of Greece in the Aegean Sea and initially sends a splash 10,000 feet into the air and sends tidal waves up and down the Mediterranean that actually mount up through the Arno Valley and inundate Florence and get all the way up to Friuli, the medieval fortress area. So that would be a flood from the sea of 900 feet.
Sounds like the flood of Noah, doesn't it?
Well, yes, he said it would wash away great antiquities. He described Malta being hit by 7 tsunamis when that happened. I mean, you know, when you think about it's like throwing a rock in the bathtub. So very detailed in several prophecies, which I've alluded to a number of times and tried to find new angles to it. So when we have this Apophis rock that's supposed to come by in 2029, and we just don't know how close it'll come by and how we might change its trajectory, so that in 2038, I believe, or 36, I can't, I don't have my notes in front of me, there might be a chance that we might, from the first passage in 2029, it might come much closer. What I'm hoping will happen by then is we'll be a much more mature human race. We'll have come through a lot of these difficulties, and we will look more seriously in protecting our planet from such events by applying technology that would divert this rock from being a threat.
All right, let's go to La Jolla, California. Thomas, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Thomas.
Thank you, George, for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I stole my thunder because my question to Dr. Hoag, and Dr. Hoag, it's an honor and a pleasure to speak with you. But prophecy addresses like war, famine, plague, pestilence, etc. And several commentators interviewed on Coast to Coast in the last year have predicted a Planet X type of apocalypse.
Yes.
By that, I mean not just an asteroid, but actually a large planetary body, a Nibiru type of object, or and or a rogue comet, and or a dwarf star, that type of scenario that would enter the solar system and ravage the inner solar system, specifically Mars, Venus, and Earth. And several commentators really stand by this, saying that planetary governments have been preparing for this, you know, event to happen within the next 2 to 10 years. Well, and so I was wondering if prophecy or Nostradamus or you or anybody has addressed this.
I talk about it a lot, and the most I deal with it is in a book that's one of my more satirical books called Nostradamus, The End of End Times, which looks at all kinds of misinterpreted, in my opinion, end times prophecies, including 2012, which became what I call in the book the Lindsay Lohan of doomsday dates, totally Hollywoodized. I talk about Nibiru and the Nibiru cult in that, and there are certain things to watch out in any kind of groupthink that's collected from that almost takes a religious fervor. For instance, those who think the sun is responsible for everything that's going wrong with the climate, or those who think that there's something so massive like this that the 600-700 amateur astronomers who for some reason have not seen it and they can be all censored and suppressed, which is virtually impossible given the way the internet is. If there was indeed a planet-sized object coming through the outer Oort cloud, we would know it's coming for years. So I'm on the scientist, the astrophysicist side on this. This is just kind of a cult religion, more than anything to do with fact, and I categorically stand by that there is no Nibiru coming. There is no rogue dwarf star or something coming anytime in our near future. In fact, the only cosmic disaster that seems to be waiting for us of that nature deals about 1,800 years from now in Nostradamus' prophecies, where the sun, for some reason, advances and it swells up into a red giant stage and basically burns out the Earth. It becomes as wide as the orbit of the Earth, which indeed some astronomers say the mass of the sun, if it were to become a red star, a red giant, would go about to the diameter of the orbit of Earth. So, but fortunately, the human race is not here when that happens, and they are living in the constellations of Aquarius and Cancer. I say that because in the old 16th century French, he's actually calling these places, not astrological signs, locales of life. So that's at least my take on it. So, no Nibiru is It's like the country music song, and she left me like the bubbles in my Nibiru.
Dallas, Georgia, we go. Michael's turn on Coast to Coast. Michael, you're on with John Hoag.
Yes, I love you both. I appreciate both of you being on there. I have a compliment for John.
Mm-hmm.
I have too many for you, George. I don't have enough time.
We'll do that on an open line Friday one night.
Yes. John, I want to thank you very much for showing me that Nazi thing in Russia, you know, Crimea. I could never understand that completely. Now I do. I have a posing thought with you. When you brought up Deuteronomy, I'm a prophet. Deuteronomy 18:18 says he brings you one out of his people, and he puts words in his mouth. And right now we're going through a time where Abraham's first son, his second son, got his birthright. We're going through a time for the first son to get it. It might recalculate all that because Buddha in Hindu is not in the Deuteronomy. I want to thank you for all your service.
Thank you very much for that. And like I said before, Deuteronomy has its value, for at least it tells us what the ancient Hebrews believed was what a prophet should prove, have merit to prove in prophecy. But when it goes out to say, we are the ones chosen to have this because God talks to us, I can tell you categorically from going around the world and encountering religions and prophets firsthand and different prophetic traditions, that all of them think that God speaks to them and not to any of you. It is a bias shared by almost every dogma of religion that their prophets and the way they see things is the right way, and all the rest of you are wrong. So the odds are, skeptically inquiring into this, is there's more chances that you're all misreading your prophets rather than one of you being right. And I addressed that in my book, Messiahs, in plural, when I looked at the study of 33 different messianic traditions all around the world, Eastern, Western, Native, Judeo-Christian, all of them, and showed how they all have this seemingly hubristic point of view, which I think is a blinder to seeing how, you know, I could also say Buddha never saw the biblical prophets. Now, according to Buddha, that in this logical way of looking at this, that means they don't exist. They're not true prophets. So it goes both ways.
Let's go to Gary now in Santa Maria, California, west of the Rockies. Good morning, Gary.
Oh, thanks, George. John, you mentioned the Citizens United case, and Citizens United on steroids is going to be the Trans-Pacific Partnership that's just about ready to go fast track.
SHAFTA, yes.
So many Coast listeners that are upset about GMO labeling and the pharmaceutical industry. This is all going to go to a corporate court set up by TPP that has judges that represent these corporations on one hand, and then the next day they sit in judgment of those corporations on the very next day. Completely guts our national sovereignty, and I wondered if this is going to be a black hole that Ross Perot used to refer to as a sucking sound. If anybody thinks that NAFTA and CAFTA caused our corporations and manufacturing base to leave this country, and the politicians that are behind it, Rand Paul supports it, Barack Obama supports it, against it, the Cato Institute, Bernie Sanders, and your guests that you had to reschedule, Ellen Brown and Elizabeth Warren, are up in arms about it. We're about ready to sell out this country if this TPP goes through.
I
wondered if that plays in to the short time window that you had explained when, what was it, Saturn goes back into Scorpio
in
late summer?
Yes, it does. And it is like a last chance to stop this because, you know, we're coming to a resolution not just with that, but also a America's resolution with the European Union to create another one of these. And yes, it is good to bring this out. This is one. This is a fire alarm moment in prophecy, where what Citizens United started to kind of curtail individual rights of citizens and sovereignty in our country is now spreading to an international cabal, and it is not going to be talked about much by the corporate news media because they're part of it. Their bosses do not wish this to be stated. It's actually a big theme in my new book, and it's in the chapter I call the Under Government Coup.
You wrap up your book, John, with an essay called The Spark. Without giving it away, what did you mean by that?
Well, in this book, this epic-sized book of about 125,000 words, it is basically, it's kind of an overview of how we have laid out before us all the elements. We've set the stage. We've laid out the elements. We've put the saltpeter and the gunpowder and this and the wick and all that. And at any moment, some little incident, something even small, might be enough to trigger it. It's just like a boy gets shot in a tussle with a policeman, and it created the American Intifada.
Yep.
It's like a man in Tunisia who's being overly screwed by bureaucracy and corruption, douses himself with gasoline before the government office, burns himself alive, and it starts the Arab Spring. And basically what I'm looking at in the essay at the end of this is all the ways in which we can do three kinds of spark firings. The first is where we set the stage for all the tinder, and all it needs is somebody to throw a match or pour some gasoline on the fire, and everything erupts. It also looks at the idea of the spark of genius. What is genius? What could be a spark that gives us a whole new way of looking at things and then act upon it? And then the deepest spark is the spark that is sparked without a match. And that is what I call the spark of the inescapable truth. And that is a soul truth of our spirit, that what I offer in the book is engaged and activated by meditation techniques, by what is going to be the direction of religion in the future in the Aquarian Age, which is an age of science. Our religions will be more scientific. That is, it won't be about blind faith. They will be about knowing through experience, through skeptical inquiry, through actually having experience of what is the divine. And I contend that meditation, a practice of the science of self-observation, is one of those ways. And so I end the book with an offer, which I offer to all of you listening, that if you just contact my contact button at hogueprophecy.com and just put in the line meditation, the subject line of the email, I will give you freely what I know and links and information to the kind of meditations, the techniques that I've been doing since 1980. And if you find what I'm saying original, refreshing, interesting, or my books unusual or insightful, provocative, whatever's good in what I'm giving you comes from a practice of stepping out of my own way through the science of self-observation, and I offer it to all of you.
Let's go to Hollywood, Maryland. Frank's turn. We'll get you in here. Frank, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, real quick. Thank you, George. Mr. Hogue, Hillary Clinton, I see her going 4 years, and then I keep seeing the name Bill Richardson, former governor of New Mexico, as a running mate. But did he do something in his past that would negate that? And Pope Francis, Pope Benedict before him, there was just something about Pope Benedict that it wasn't, I can't explain it. It's just something about him that, and see, I'm a 240 hitting Catholic myself, but there's just something about him that in all due respect, that there's something about him that it wasn't.
Okay, I only got a minute left, John.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay, quickly. I have a book called The Last Pope that looks at the prophecies of St. Malachi and looks at the predictions of the Pope. Benedict is actually in the position of the Pope who would see the crisis, the apostasy of the church at its highest leadership areas. The conspiracies that happened to him were very much part of that. It's possible, and I am actually going to reissue my book, The Last Pope, this year in a new edition later this year.
Good timing.
And especially since the Pope Francis is so much changing the tradition that he's almost is the last pope because he's changing the tradition and is even openly saying that he'll retire as well. So it gives a whole new spin and look at what the last pope really is all about. And so I'm going to issue that book.
As for Bill Richardson, he was being looked at for some improper business dealings. The investigation was dropped. Never went any further. John Hoag, my friend, see you next time.
See you later, everybody. Thank you, George, for having me on.
Absolutely. We'll watch your prophecies, see what happens, what comes true, and what might not. For Nathan Staton, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.